Welcome to the DrDavidMarlin.com Stable Science Podcast. I'm Dr. David Marlin, and along with a great team of experts, I'm helping horse owners and riders achieve optimal performance for their much-loved horses. In these podcasts, we will discuss science-led research, technology, information, and advice to help you care for your horses so they may live healthier, happier, and longer lives. To support the podcast and all our research and science for horses, go to our website, www.drdavidmarlin.com. And to learn more about what we do and the hot topics under discussion, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, well, I'm here at Olympia with Professor Lars Rupstorff, who is the FEI's surfaces expert, and we were just chatting, and Lars and I reckon we've probably known each other for 35 years. So anyway, morning Lars, how are you?
Morning David, I'm just fine. Yeah, at least that's amazing, we're getting old, David.
don't say that. So I wanted to talk to you about, not just about how you ended up here. I keep calling it Olympia, of course it's the London International Horse Show. You're here, well we'll find out why you're here. But I just want to talk to you a bit about how you started. I mean, have you always ridden?
Yes, yeah. It's a horse family. My mother was riding. I was only actually born in Denmark, and when we moved to Sweden when I was like 2 years old, she brought horses, since that, horse has been definitely a part of my life. So horses was actually the reason I went to vet studies, because I wanted to work with horses.
And where did you study veterinary medicine?
In Sweden.
In Sweden, at Uppsala.
In Uppsala, yeah.
And that is the only veterinary
university? Sweden is a small country, so we only have one vet university.
Small country, but punches quite high above its weight, I think, in equestrian sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah. Right now, at least.
And you're still riding now, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm still riding. I'm an amateur rider. I was actually on the team when I was a junior rider, but then I went into my studies and so on. But I kind of kept up riding and competing in show jumping, and then, you know, it tend to be that most riders go to dressage when they go old, but I actually started doing eventing instead, because I have to live as I teach, and what I teach is variation in training.
And your wife events as well.
Yeah, so, of course, that's part of the reason.
And you go off together at the weekend.
Yeah, she's the one who says, okay, now now you're going here and here. And
okay, so you're following along.
Just following along.
So after you qualified as a vet, what did you do next?
So I actually started, I did at that time, you know, this is quite many years ago, it was today doing research is more or less like a continuing education, but at that time you could walk up to the to the professor and say, I'd like to do your some research, and he or she will just put you in a room and say, okay, you start. So I started research more or less in I was lucky being in Uppsala at a time when biomechanics was really developing a lot. So my very first teacher when I went to vet school was Professor Ingvar Fredriksson, which of course you perhaps don't know, but both Peter and Jens Fredriksson.
I actually did meet him.
Yeah. So that's his father, their father. And he was my very first teacher and very inspiring. And he did some very groundbreaking research in biomechanics using high-speed cinematography. We're not talking video, didn't really exist back in the 60s and 70s. But long story short, the research, which was actually aimed at looking at doing objective lameness examination of horses and so on, the most practical thing it ended up in was surface research related to trotting racetracks. So the work he did was actually the foundation for the basic for starting banking trotting racetracks. And if you've been on a racetrack today and you see the banking, you get amazed about how good horses do it without any banking at all.
And that's really strongly founded in scientific process lameness.
He basically showed that it was very, very put a lot of strain on the on the horses going on a sharp turn without having any banking, because basically the distal phalanxes of the horse are hinge joints, so they have rather poor possibility to adapt to lateral angles.
Okay, and I mean, there was a lot of biomechanics researchers that sort of, I guess, at the same time, people like Goran Dahlin.
Stig Drevenhorn.
Yeah, Stig, and I'm trying to think. And then, of course, there were...
The Dutch team was
at the same time.
Yeah.
Is that one you have to take?
Yeah, I have to take that.
Okay, that's a work call. We'll just pause for a sec.
Yeah.
Okay, we're back after a short interlude there. Of course, you are here working, so we have to let you take any work calls. But, of course, at that time, as you were mentioning, there was the group in Holland at Utrecht, but also in Sweden, there was people like Arne Lindholm,
yes.
Sune Persson, who were more probably physiology,
yes.
Rather. But, of course, this is we're going back, aren't we, to the sort of late 60s, early 70s when equine exercise physiology took off. So you qualified in what year?
85.
And then you went straight into biomechanics PhD?
Yes, I went straight into biomechanics PhD, but I did it basically on part-time. I actually went out as a private practitioner, but later on then worked on different equine hospitals, but also back to the university and with teaching positions at the university in combinations.
And you still have a position at
Well, I was the interesting thing, and which I think it was quite important in my life and my work career, is when I finished when I finally finished my PhD, I was more or less immediately recruited to the Equine Studies program. So we have quite a unique, I would say, Equine Studies program in the sense that it's totally on academic level, with the best trainers and practitioners that we have, the best animal science people, the best veterinary people, and we take the best from veterinary science and animal science and the practical knowledge, and give them a 3-year university education. And I was responsible for all the veterinary medicine there, and I was also doing 5 years at heading the whole department before I went over to a professor position with research. But the reason it was important was that, I mean, it's kind of a sometimes overused word, but that really gave me a holistic perspective in horse performance and health, working very closely with the best riders, trotting trainers, and also we had, at some time, we were working with racing. Racing is a small industry relatively in Sweden compared to some other countries. But also now lately more with Icelandic training. So really a variety of trainers and riders from different disciplines. And that was a marvelous pot to steer around with the theory and the practice, and really got me. To be honest, you know, I need to go a little bit back to, because I think this is an interesting story. So, you know, when starting at the vet school in 85, already starting out, you started hanging out down on the clinics, and you were quite, I would say, surprised, you know, going down there and looking at the best professors and clinicians. And you know, it turned out they couldn't even agree on which limb the horse was lame on.
Yes, that's been a recurring theme in veterinary orthopedics, I think, equine orthopedics.
So that was a very, very simple reason that I wanted to work with biomechanics. And my PhD thesis was actually constructing and validating a force measuring shoe, because lameness is, to a vast majority, weight-bearing lameness. So what is the gold standard to measure that? Well, force, of course, and that's the reason I did my thesis in constructing a force measuring shoe. And luckily I was in Uppsala at a point where biomechanics was really increasing with getting the resources and the people and everything there. So that's really been the main driving force for me to go into research, that is to be better at understanding horse locomotion.
So I guess you're a little bit like me. I call myself a hobby electronics engineer, very hobby mechanical engineer. I think you're a few levels above me, because you build a lot of stuff. So is that engineering from school, or did you teach yourself, or?
I'm a hobby engineer as well, for sure. So I think it's just about, to be honest, it's about interest and motivation, you know. So when I literally constructed and built this force measuring shoe at that time, well, I did the electronics, I did a lot of the mechanics. Of course, I had supervisors from technical schools as well. But it started very, very early on with a broad perspective, everything from electronics handling data to mechanical engineering. And it's just about, you know, reading stuff when you need it to solve a problem.
I think in a way our backgrounds might be very similar, because I did computing as a separate course at university. Because I thought, well, this is going to be something that's quite interesting. And when I was doing my PhD and in those years at the Animal Health Trust, first of all, you had to build things because there weren't any things built for horses, like masks or flow meters or anything like this. And secondly, we had computers, but there was no off-the-shelf software to do anything. So I had to write all my own software to collect data, to do calculations. And so for me, that was a great experience. It enabled me to collaborate with a lot of people. And I'm guessing your path was similar, that there wasn't stuff necessarily built for horses to do what you wanted to do.
No, and it's quite interesting, the perspective. I'm just coming to think about it. So when I started at the Department of Anatomy, because that's where the research were done, we actually had three engineers, one on computers, one on one mechanical engineer, and one in electronics, you know. And we had the shop. We had the shop at the department. Today, everything is outsourced. But it's really like you were saying, that time you really had to kind of invent things from the very beginning. But I would say that it had changed quite a lot. Today, working with biomechanics as a research area is actually more about attending seminars, congresses, reading, and just trying to see what is useful for research in horses. So the development that is about, you know, space industry or car industry or things like that. They develop the technology and the analysis methods or whatever it is. And the trick today is about finding out what can we apply in biomechanics.
Yeah, we've spent time looking at a lot of interesting sensors for different
example,
applications.
For example, yes.
And, look, I found another one. Is this any good? You know, it's... but your son, of course, has gone into... this sort of industry, hasn't he?
Well, I mean, of course, we allowed him to or where he got a pony, but since I was a cheap parent, I bought him a cheap pony that took away with him and throwing off a couple of times, so he was very, very effectively weaned from horses at an early age, at least from the riding. I'm sorry, but anyway, when he then continued education and he came to his university studies, he eventually went into to engineering studies, and I persuaded him to do some bachelor's thesis together with me and a company working with locomotion analysis.
And this isn't the BBC. You can advertise. You can say the name of the company.
Okay, so it was Qualisys who is doing it.
And for people who don't know, just Qualisys...
Well, Qualisys is one out of, I would say, three major and old companies being in locomotion analysis. And I mean, most of locomotion analysis today, that's like in movies like Avatar, which is actual now, but it's also in industry, and it's just about controlling kinematics, that is movement, basically measuring movements. And they do the hardware for this, which is high-speed video cameras, which are working with infrared light and markers. So it's an old technology, but that's another very interesting thing. Anyway, he worked with that. He did his master thesis. He eventually got his got a position there after he was finished his study, and was going into the industry. But turned out that and he said he would never work with horses. And he told me I would not.
We've all said that.
And he didn't want to write, and he didn't want to to read anything more, but it only took a couple of years, and then he went into to PhD studies in Zurich together with Mike Weishaupt, who has done a lot of interesting work in both physiology and biomechanics in horses, very well known colleague, professor. Anyway, and after his thesis, the interesting thing, he was recruited by Slate, which is, I think, it's a very, very interesting company, which is actually one of my PhD students, Elin Handlund, who started that together with one of the technical universities in Uppsala, who is working with AI to analyze video. So today, when just tying things together, when I was doing my very first work together with Professor Stig Greven, my tutor, I was sitting, looking at high-speed cinematography.
That background noise, everyone probably can hear that rumble, isn't thunder. It's planes taking off, I think, from London City Airport, which is just next door. Sorry about that. I thought I'd better clarify just in case people thought that.
Sorry. Okay, so yeah, we're really going away to different things. But I think it's interesting, and everything kind of ties together. So what he's doing now is working with his company Slate, and what they are doing is using AI technology to base just on an iPhone video recording. You can basically do the same thing that we do with Lemus Locator or other of these sensor-based things. So without markers, without sensors, just with the video from an iPhone, you are able to actually do the basic locomotion analysis to detect weight-bearing lamuses. This is just amazing how technology has developed. Like when I started, I was saying I was looking at cinematography with 500 frames per second, and manually with a crosshair looking at the position of each marker. It took hours and hours to
analyze one stride.
To analyze one single stride. And I know that's just an amazing journey.
Yeah, that's the thing when people always say, have computers really changed the world? It's they do things that we can't do, and they also do things that we can do, but much quicker. Mm. So, if we can talk about surfaces, how did you get to be where you are now through your surfaces work? What's the story?
Well, again, the short version is the tradition of surface work, where I was talking about Professor Fredriksson and also Professor Drevimo did work with that, so I was involved with that on a very early stage, and it was a kind of a tradition. Then I would say it was an important thing was actually Athens, where we had several horses sustaining severe injuries.
So that's 2004 Olympics.
Exactly.
And I actually did do the test event on the thermoregulation side.
You see there. And that, together with of course, a number of colleagues and so on, we were in the right position. I mean, I should be very honest with that. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do research on, but you also need to get the funding for it. And when things like that happened, all of a sudden, FEI was very interested in funding the research that could lead to less injuries in relation to to surfaces. So it started out, we managed to get some serious funding from FEI and together with World Horse Welfare. And that was really, we had two approaches to it. So one was doing testing and developing and testing method. This is what we're doing today with what I call the OBST, Orono Biomechanical Surface Tester. So it's basically a mechanical hoof or a robot hoof that mimics the loading and load rates of a horse and landing speeds, landing angles, everything. It's really a natural environment here with a lot of background sounds.
Is it dog agility that they have here as well? I should mention Lars and I are in the bar behind the scenes. So we're sitting next to the warm-up arena and there's quite a few dogs around, and some of the horses are not that impressed when the dogs start barking, I have to say. There's one very vocal one here.
Well, anyway, I mean, so we got funding, serious funding, and doing both epidemiological and biomechanical studies back in 2008, 2009 it started. And since then it's been a continuous collaboration with FEI, but also with funding from British Equestrian Federation, from the Swedish Equestrian Foundation for Research, and so on and so forth. A number of, so that's very important to mention that we have got good funding for this research, and also a nice, very, very nice, interesting international collaboration with co-workers in UK with Sarah Jane Holmes and her team, with Mick Peterson in the US, who has been working a lot with testing racing surfaces.
So when did the mechanical hoof first get used to manage surface at competition?
So it started out there in 2008-09. Mick Peterson has developed the foundation, the basics for the mechanical hoof for testing racetracks. We met and I realized that we started out, you know, using the horse.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So it's a test bed, putting accelerometers on the hoofs and things like that, and doing kinematic measurements. And of course, it's a little bit difficult to use the horse as a test machine and transport it all around the world. So it was quite logical to create a mechanical horse to test the surface that could be consistent testing. And I really want to say in that context also that it's important that the difference with the machine that we're using today compared, there's a lot of machines for athletic turfs for road building and so on, used to test ground properties. But the machine that we are using is by far the one most mimicking the forces and the loads from a real horse, meaning that we are, I'm not saying that we are doing it perfectly or absolutely correctly, but I think we are the one who are testing the surfaces in a position where we can say this is what the horse feels when it walks on different grounds or works on different grounds. That's important. That's really important. The next thing, which is at the end, is today that we have a huge database with thousands and thousands of tests, which is, of course, very important when you work with testing like this. It's not about refining things. You cannot change your method over time. You need to have the same method to have a good database. That's a balance that you have to take when you do this kind of
work. Can you basically simply describe what the testing system looks like? And
yes.
And how it works?
Yes. So what it is, it's basically a falling weight. We call it gravity driven. So it is a hoof, literally a horseshoe at the very end that falls and hits the ground with a specific energy, and that is defined by the drop height and the weight of this one. And we create forces like on an equestrian arena like the ones we have here. We would see peak forces of between 1,000 and 1,500 kilograms, which is what a horse would experience landing after a fence. They would actually experience it even going in fast canter. That's the kind of forces we are talking about. So tying that back to the whole motive is about allowing performance while minimizing risk of injury, of course. That's the whole idea and the overall aim. And when you understand which forces we're talking about, then you also understand that it's no wonder that we get some orthopedic injuries now and then, because it's huge forces, a ton or more on the size of a hoof, you know. And then you understand the next thing is, of course, it's so important with the surface properties taking care of that.
Right, and so to clarify for people who haven't seen this done, I've had the advantage of seeing you do this. Last time was in Tokyo. Mm. You have a large area. You don't just go into one corner and do it. You do it all the way across the arena, and you can sort of map the properties, and that feeds in, as I understand, into how the surface that should then be managed by the arena team.
Yes. So what we're doing is, I need to do a little bit of explanation here. So you need to understand some of the basic biomechanics of hoof-ground interaction. So first of all, we have the hoof hitting the ground. That is basically a kilogram or two hitting the ground with high speed, being decelerated very quickly. So you know, remember Newton and his force equals mass time acceleration. So it's a low mass but high acceleration, which can create high forces. This is very opposed to maximum load, which you see at mid-stance or when the cannon bone is basically vertical. And at that point you have a very high mass, but it's not a large acceleration. So that's another way of creating force. And this is one of the tricky things with surfaces, that you need to distinguish between these two events. And in addition to this, we need also to talk about grip. We'll come back to that. But the thing with horses, what we want to have is actually quite a good support for the hoof when it lands. We don't want a surface where the hoof rotates around in the surface a lot. It should just basically give a... If we're talking equestrian sports, because this is, of course, different in different disciplines, but equestrian sports, I like to say that you should clearly see the print of the hoof and the frog, basically. Then you have a good impact firmness. This is relating to the hoof landing in the surface. But the tricky thing is when this tons or more coming in mid stance, then you would like to dampen that a bit. And that has something to do with the deeper layers in the surface. So that's why we distinguish between what we call impact firmness and cushioning. So impact firmness is about the very top surface and what relates to just hoof landing. Cushioning is how well the deeper layers in the ground can support but also cushion these tons that the horse will experience. And of course, this is again one of the reasons that I sometimes poke a little bit fun about people going around and kicking in the ground, which is very, very far from the forces that a horse can exert on the on the ground.
Yeah, even with my winter weight, I don't think I can create 1,500 kilos when I jump on the surface.
But that brings us to another interesting aspect. How do you manage, because we've got dressage here, we've got show jumping here, we've got driving here, don't they all want something slightly different?
Yes and no. The interesting thing is that traditionally I would say dressage people would like to have a surface that it's a little bit more fluffy, but today when I talk to the top riders in dressage, they say if the show jumping riders are happy with the surface, then we are too. So the only very, very slight difference that a maintenance staff would do is to just use the harrow on the very, very top to tickle it a little bit on the very top. So very, very, very small difference. Actually lower the impact firmness a little bit. But the cushioning, you know, it's a horse in extended canter or whatever it is, also exerts quite a huge high forces. So we still want to have a little bit of give. And this is the reason that in addition to impact firmness and cushioning, we also talk about responsiveness or elasticity of the ground. So that's a way of creating a surface that can dampen the max forces, and not being a spring mat, because that's difficult to create, but at least retain the same properties all the time. So we really want to have some elasticity, some give in deeper layers, but that because that can easily, you know, lower the peak forces by 20% in something that okay would look absolutely the same, but depending on how the deeper layer are managed, coming into this cushioning value and the responsiveness, as I say, we can go from a 1,400-1,500 kilo on average to a 1,200 easily. And this is one of the things that this is one of the really important things from a research perspective, because we actually don't know what is today from a biological point of view or a biomechanical point of view. We don't have the research data to say this is an ideal situation. Of course, it's quite logical to say that we want to have as low cushioning as possible, because that will be lower peak forces to the horses. But the nice thing is that FEI has again financed quite a big study. So during the next year, 2023, we are going to test some 20 horses on 150, 160 fences on three very different surfaces, you know, high cushioning, very, very compacted surfaces, a very high grip surface, and one that is has a clear elasticity. And then with sophisticated biomechanical research technology, again, it's kinematic and kinetic analysis, we should be able to actually look at the forces in the tendon insertions and the collateral ligaments, look at moments in the different joints and so on. And then maybe we can say something more about what is what properties we want to lower risk of injury. We can make this balance between performance and risk of injury even better.
So, I mean, here we're at an indoor show, and of course you do outdoor surfaces as well. So, for example, I don't know what the last ones you did. I remember you did, of course, the cross-country course at Tokyo, because that was a surface that was created. Mm-hmm. How does that differ? I mean, do you use watering on the indoor surfaces?
Absolutely.
Okay, so harrowing and watering would be indoor and outdoor.
There are two things, two important things is, of course, the construction, that is the materials, but equally important and perhaps even more important is maintenance. And maintenance is about water, it's about harrowing and deeper and deep and shallow harrowing and dragging. That's basically the mechanical work plus the moisture. Moisture level is incredibly important, and it's incredibly important to have moisture not on the top layer, that's to do some dust control, but water in the deeper layers, because when you really kind of saturate the deeper layers in a good sand mixture, then you have an amazingly ability for the ground to disseminate the forces. So actually when you look at the surface on a good arena, you can see how the surface moves around the hoof impact. It could be a square meter where you can actually see that the ground moves a bit sideways. What you see, it moves sideways, and what you actually see is the shock waves from the horse being disseminated into the surrounding, and that dampens the peak force, of course.
Which is good.
And when you get used to it, you can also hear it, because you don't want to hear this clicking. You want to hear something that is more like a boom, boom, boom.
Right. Which means that the impact over time is being spread out.
Exactly.
Okay. Changing tack a little bit. Earlier on this year, you did, one of the first studies on looking at the difference between barefoot and shod horses jumping with Petter Fredriksson, of course, who was quite successful in Tokyo for Sweden in the jumping. That was a study that was funded by, I'm fighting against the commentator now, must be getting very exciting next door. That was funded by Agria, the Swedish insurance company that's now actually launched in the UK as well. It's great to see an insurance company funding a study like this. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to be there and watch you doing some of this. It was technically very challenging. Can you... there's been a little bit in the media about what you found, but what can you... because you haven't presented this at a scientific conference yet, have you? But what can you say about that study?
Well, I mean, it was an amazing study, and again, it's about technology, of course. So we were actually using 30 high-speed cameras. You want to make a break while they're doing the maintenance, because
is that maintenance that you approve of? Yeah, we're going to take a break just while they're harrowing the surface.
Yeah,
we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Okay, so they've finished harrowing the arena, which I think Lars is happy with. So we were talking about the barefoot study.
Yeah. well, I mean, again, yes, it was really nice to be able to work directly with Audrey on this project, and of course it's. It's interesting when they want to go in and they wanted to do a really follow up the whole procedure. So one of the things that we did with the study that I really like is that they made a lot of nice media productions. Now they're mainly in Swedish, but videos and things like that explaining the whole process, not only the results. I mean, many times research is, you know, presenting a couple of slides with a couple of diagrams or tables or something like that. But actually to record the whole and follow the whole process, the planning, the whole performance, collecting the data and so on, that's been really, really nice, so people understand well, how much work there is behind perhaps a few lines of data in a research report.
So the big question is barefoot better than being shod or different?
Well, biology is never black and white.
No.
So I don't think there ever will be any research related to barefoot or shoeing that will find a cure-all method. The thing we will learn is more to adapt to specific individuals.
And I think that's what Axel, who is the farrier, as I understand, from Norway, who introduced Petter when Petter wanted to go barefoot. It was Axel, was it?
Who worked he was involved in it. Yeah.
And, you know, talking to him, he has a very, I think, pragmatic approach in saying,
Some horses transition to barefoot very quickly and you see an immediate improvement. Other horses, it can take a year. You said other horses, barefoot just doesn't suit them and will never suit them. So that's really what you're saying about it. It's not black and white. It's not barefoot is always better, shod is always better. There's...
What I want to start with, and I always start with when we discuss this, is that why do we shoe horses? Well, there are three basic, very simple basic things. You need to have better grip, you need to have protection from wear, and you need to have protection from pressure. I mean, if you walk on a hard, big stones. So those three things. So if you're going to use your horse in a situation where you can't guarantee those three things, you need to shoe it. Simple as that. If the hoof is worn down more than it grows, then you need to shoe it. If you don't have the grip, you need to put shoes on it. And even the top riders, they will put shoes on the horses or create grip in other ways when they go on turf. For example, Peter would he tried to go without. Go without shoes on the turf, and it actually works to do as long as you don't go in the speed classes and or jump offs. But apart from that, so if you don't have the grip, and some horses are really sensitive, you know, if the ground is uneven with gravel stones and things like that, you need to put shoes on it. Period.
Okay.
But apart from that, from the other side of it is that. Of course, the horse is made to go barefoot. Simple as that.
Yeah.
So the horse. So very, very generalized and simple. The function of the hoof is made and constructed to go barefoot, and you will, in some way, hinder that with a shoe.
But then the barefoot horse, of course, isn't going those distances at those speeds, jumping, turning rapidly.
Exactly.
It's not doing what we wanted to do in competition.
No, so that's the reason I took the first three prerequisites.
So for ordinary horse owners, you know, whether they're pleasure owners or competition, what would you say are the things they need to know about surfaces?
I think they really need to understand that from a biological point of view, we should start there. Then the most important thing is actually variation. As with, I would say, with all training of the horses, variation, successive adaptation. Variation can be, if we talk from a very general perspective, variation, that is about the amount of work you're doing, the intensity of the work, the type of work. And type is, of course, one thing of type is, of course, the surface. So if you're going to be prepared, if you are a competition rider and go to different shows, they will always be different. So the only way to prepare for that is actually to, on purpose, train your surfaces, to train your horse on different surfaces. That's the very, very important biology thing. And even though that I work a lot with what I call the technical aspects, when it's sort of talking about different sands and different additives to the sand and maintenance procedures and all of those things, which I really work a lot with, then that's the technical point. But from a biological point of view, there is no poor surfaces. There are only poor use of surfaces.
Right, so it's kind of the situation, if you're in an endurance race and you come to a really bad patch of ground, you have two choices. You know, one is to walk or get off and lead your horse over. The other is to you trot or canter through. But if you trot or canter through, you're putting your horse at risk.
Sure.
If it's a bad surface. So I totally agree with you. It's not a bad surface. It's the decision that you make about what to do on that surface.
So that's the one point of it. The other point is, of course, with if we're looking at equestrian sport, high level equestrian sport today, it's like sometimes I like to compare it to motorsport. It's spectacular, and we are kind of pushing the limits from a performance point of view. But if you look at motorsports, the reason that we have different formulas and so on, that is because you need to limit the risk. And the very simple fact, the more we tune a surface towards high performance, that is the speed or being able to make big jumps and so on, we will inevitably come to a point where we actually increase forces. And forces is the basis for all kind of orthopedic injuries, period.
Makes sense?
Yeah.
Listen, that's been brilliant. Thanks ever so much, and I think you now need to go and test some surfaces.
I will, for sure.
Okay, thanks, Lars.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
I hope you enjoyed this podcast and the Stable Science series. If you want to learn more about this topic and our work, head over to the drdavidmarlin.com website. Our website and community of members discuss a wide breadth of topics, and the website houses thousands of articles, webinars, videos, and research, all designed to help horse owners, riders, trainers, and breeders achieve optimal performance for their much-loved horses. The drdavidmarlin.com site is an independent information resource for all equestrians, a source of unbiased, science-based research. To learn more about what we do and the hot topics under discussion, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter.